Good evening, ladies and gentlemen and department heads. We're here for the second night of this, and I want to make a switch in the agenda already. Originally, assessment was department was supposed to be on at 5:30, and I am going to have weights and measures with Don Ellis on first and given consideration where Don resides. And so if you want to begin, you are on.
Okay. There's...
Want to use the microphone if it's working?
Yeah. I believe that. There it is. I didn't have very many changes. I did make my 1% cut for this year. The I guess I better go through the recommended budget slideshow. I did increase my revenues a little bit to help make that cut and decreased my fuel supply line and auto maintenance because I have not had any issues with my vehicle, so, and the price of fuel has been staying down, so I haven't needed as much money for those two, I'm guessing. Other than that, everything else is staying pretty much the same. No OTRs. No new employees. Still just me.
And the page that is the number four section, page 349, if anybody wants to, in the big book, go over there. Anyone have any questions for Don? Mike Lane, go ahead.
Jim, I don't know how to make this a question, but I say it every year, and I think it gets more important every year when we think about having backup in our departments and successors, possibly and for future retirements or sicknesses or other things. And this department is a one-person show.
Yes.
Don does a great job for us, but I really think we should seriously consider starting someone else in that department as a part-time person, for example, or to give Don some assistance. And I know in the past, and maybe he can speak to it, there are some things that he's not able to do under for consumer protection that because he has hands full with all the normal kinds of things, at least told us that in the past. But I just think it's important that we not lose track of that.
Anyone else? Julie?
I noticed that you had raised your revenues, and since the state didn't increase what you can charge, I couldn't see any basis for you raising them because just keeping up with your workload doesn't suggest to me that you're going to be able to raise revenues. So you just said you did it to meet the 1% cut, but that seems... Wishful thinking to me.
I actually have a little bit of a cushion in my revenue line. I explained this to Joe when I met with him before this. I have roughly about $1,500, $2,000 cushion in my revenue line. I actually make a little more than what the budget says. The reason for that is if one or two main businesses leave, I'm going to be below my revenues. Like if Walmart or... one of the big stations in Lansing goes out of business, they're roughly $900 to $1,000 in invoice. So I kind of try to keep a little bit of a cushion there for the flexibility of the businesses.
Where in our pages is that shown? Do you know,
but,
Joe?
Maybe this is just getting at what Don is saying in a different way. If you look at what he's actually received in revenues over the past couple of years in 2012 and 2013, you can see that he's realized a little more than $24,000 in each of those years. That's his actual revenue stream. He's been budgeting more like $22,000. So he had the capacity to raise his estimate of revenues and still be well within what the revenue trend is showing.
And part of that excess has also been from late fees, businesses not paying their bills on time. And that's something that I can't guarantee that it's going to be an income.
Peter Stein.
It's a question I've thought about every so often, and it came up recently when I discovered that Cornell required 1% cut in all departments. When you have large departments, I can see how you can do that, but it must be a point where when you have relatively small departments, they can't somehow do it. So how do you take care of that situation? What do you do exactly?
Stretch as tight as you can get, and Don's an example of that. But then you'll see others. The county attorney's office is a great example of that. And there you're going to see OTRs. You're going to see over-target requests that we've recommended that you fund because they just can't stretch anymore.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So there are some departments that where it's impossible to do that.
And you're absolutely right. See, it's yep. the smaller okay. departments that have the hardest time.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else for weights and measures? Dooley, one more.
Well, this is probably for Joe instead of Don, but there is a line under expenditures called premium pay, and I don't know what that is.
Do you get a longevity, Don?
Yes.
It's probably his longevity payment.
So every place in our book that it says premium pay, it's going to be longevity?
It may be a bundled account. It may include shift pay also in some departments that have shift pay. I don't think that's called out separately. I think it's consolidated within the premium pay category.
So I guess I would suggest if you're going to put anything else up on the website besides identifying what MM and MD and DD and DM mean, it might be good to define what premium pay is also.
Any other questions for Don? Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
And we will have assessment at this next up, and they are here and ready. Let me just say that their pages are in section 4, and they begin on page 7 in your big book. Julie?
Before we completely switch gears, I wanted to say I think Lane's comment is very important, and I would like us to consider that.
I'm not going to say duly noted, but it is noted. All right?
What was that?
That was a pun.
Okay, Jay, you're on.
Thanks for having us here. Here's our 2014-2015 recommended. Our expenditures are down. Our revenue is up, mainly due to our agreement with the town of Covert. It would be up more, but we're going to be down printing Ithaca City school bills next year when they move and go into BOCES, along with pretty much all of the other school districts. So while our revenues are up, our net local would then be down a little over 24,000. Our major influences we have, we're dealing with a lot of what I consider income tax legislation that New York State has delivered to deal with the high local property taxes caused by New York State. Pretty much STAR in general. With 22,000 people receiving the STAR exemption and the state verifying income, making people register with the state each year or for at least once, and whoever's new registering with the state, it's something that I think could be more easily handled via some sort of income tax rebate. We met with the Commissioner of Tax and Finance, and he wasn't adverse to it, so it may be something that the county directors of real property tax services and the assessors kind of push. Back when STAR first came around, we used to get $25,000 a year from the state to administer it. We no longer get that money, but there's not any reduction in work. In fact, there's more. Since we have to deal, people who make over $500,000 don't get STAR. If you have an income tax liability of $4,000, you don't get STAR. We're going to have to deal with the freeze checks that are going out with school tax bills for everyone who doesn't live in the Ithaca City School District. And that's going to be impossible for us to answer someone's questions. There's going to be no way for us to be able to calculate if someone's freeze check is correct. That's just going to be a headache. But one of my favorite checks that New York State's going to be giving out is the family with children $350 check. unfortunately, just one. But where you can receive that if you're receiving the basic STAR exemption or eligible. So just one more thing that our office is going to have to answer questions on. Along with that, we have baby boomers are now turning 65. This last year, we had 498 new senior exemptions or enhanced STAR exemptions. So that's 498 new income tax returns that our one staff person who processes these exemptions had to review and qualify. Along with that, we're going to have two retirements coming up this year. So that's 20% of my staff over 60-some years of appraisal experience. And unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of young people out there nowadays that want to become assessors or be appraisers. So we're going to be stretched to try to find somebody to step in. I don't want to say replace the people we have because there's no replacing those two. But it's going to be hard to try to find people to come in and train them. And the real estate market's still pretty strong here. We're doing extensive field review. If you stop by our office during the day, you may find our two office staff people and one other appraiser in the office. We've reviewed the town of Danby, Newfield, a couple areas in the town of Ithaca, the Cigarette Streets and Williamsburg Park, the town of Groton. We reviewed the village of Groton last year. This time we're doing the town of Groton, the village of Dryden, and the town of Ulysses. So we'll be expecting a good number of informal reviews. And along with that, one thing I thought was interesting, since 1999, our parcel count has gone up 2,274 parcels. So we've really effectively added the town of Newfield in parcel size to the work that we're doing. And during that time from 1999, our staffing has decreased from 19 to the 11 and a half people that is recommended in this budget. So here's our staffing levels. We only had 2012 through 2015, so it looks like we're adding one person and a 9.5% change, but put a little perspective in there. We're down 65.2% since 2000, and since 2010, down 13 people, or 13%. If ideal and we would be at those 13 people, full-time equivalents in my office, but for now we're happy with 11.5. Based upon the staffing we had. If we weren't staffing based upon individuals, 13 would be our magic number. We have two over-target requests. The first over-target request is for a multi-year half-time position. I mentioned our retirements. Our commercial appraiser is going to retire. But luckily, he will come back as a half-time position to hopefully train whoever is going to be replacing him, whether we find someone from the outside or an internal candidate steps up to the plate. So this would be a $30,000 salary item for him plus fringe. OTR2. Typically, each year, we have at least one project assistant that comes in from January through June and helps with the senior exemptions, help with the informal assessment review hearings. This year, with the increase in revenue, we can almost cover this position for the full year. I think it's 44 weeks we can cover with under the base budget, and this over target request of about $8,700 lets that person stay on through the months of October and November, when we would need them from really December and January through September. And this, right now we only have two office staff people. So with two phone lines, the public coming in, dealing with all of the exemptions and the sales, if one of them is out for any extended period of time, Irene and I spend a lot of time out in the front office, or the appraisers that are around are out there in the front office helping the public, and just not a good use of resources. And that's it.
Questions for Jay? Peter Stein.
So I'm flabbergasted when I see that number, 65% reduction in staff. I mean, how can you possibly do that with the same, mm-hmm. Because I can imagine the business hasn't changed very much in that period of time. Is that the internet or computers or something like that that makes that possible, or what?
We've made a lot of steps and became more technologically advanced. But frankly, it's the people that we have working there. You know, just about everyone has been in the office over 10 years. We have multiple people that have been there over 20 years. So that experience allows us to be understaffed in numbers. But when you look at the quality and the quantity of work they can do, that's where we can make up that reduction.
Okay, but they're not going to be there forever, are they?
Correct, which is why we're hoping for that extra position this year, and we'll see where that takes us.
Carol, Brian, Will.
Hi, Jay. Couple of questions on the baby boomers and the enhanced STAR, since that's the leading edge, is sort of starting to come through. Are people eligible in the year in which they turn 65, or not till the year after? You get portions of years that you have to help people
As long as they turn 65 in that calendar year, they can apply by March 1 in order to receive the exemption.
Of the year in which they turn 65?
Correct.
Oh, okay. What month is it? The state, the implications of the state tax freeze checks, is that a matter of answering questions, or is the state also giving you responsibility to send out mailings and maybe checks?
No, but it's strictly answering questions. I'm on a weekly phone call with assessors, county directors in the state, and the state has been very good saying, we don't want to put added burden on the local assessment function. However, knowing people, the first call they're going to make of, my neighbor got a check for $16 and I only got a check for $14. Why is that difference? So we'll have to look at it, answer it, and pass them along to the state, because there's so many variables that'll go into that calculation that we're just not going to be able to handle.
Okay, and one more. Some of the areas that you have to deal with, particularly in this high-tech world, may be appraising businesses that aren't like what we've seen before, or that there's only one of, or some specialized high-tech equipment, or whatever it is. And I've always wondered whether it would be worth our while to pay for a few hours of consulting or a few days, whatever it would take, from somebody who really knows that field. I mean, even housing, some of these big housing developments, whether it would make sense to pay somebody who has that particular expertise rather than have our staff have to invest the time in learning an area that you're not don't usually deal with.
Yeah, we've done that. Prior to 2010, the only time we were able to get an appraisal outside of when we were being sued was when we had to value the power plant. But in talking with Joe, if I feel the need to go out and get an appraisal prior to being sued to hopefully offset being sued, Joe has authorized that use. It's, you know, it's whether we spend it now and pay our attorney to defend us later, or, you know, just spend that money now and have the expert within that field give me an opinion of value. So we do that. But honestly, those oddball properties, those are the fun ones to value.
Brian.
Thanks. Jay, my question is back to the STAR, and we all know that we had to re-register for STAR. And I also know anytime they ask for a Social Security number, there's a reason for that. Recently, I believe it was in the Journal, said that some 500 parcels or something like that had not signed up for the exemption. And this might be supposition, or maybe you know, but are those people that forgot, or they were getting STAR before and they weren't supposed to be getting it, or they were getting, for example, homesteader in Florida and STAR here, and you know you've got to make a choice. You can't have it in both places. I'd be because that was a huge undertaking on the part of the state. I've got to believe. To do that, and there must be some reciprocity amongst the states, probably vis-a-vis the IRS. So now that we've all done this, or at least I've done it, what are they finding?
That's pretty much what they've found. I think it's going to take them a while to figure out exactly how many people they've weeded out that were receiving multiple STARs within New York State or a STAR in a homestead. When the state gave me the list to remove, there was about 1,000 parcels on that to remove. After weeding out those properties that have sold, those properties that we already knew somebody moved, that got down to that 450 number.
Okay.
I'm waiting for school bills for Ithaca City to go out. More waiting for people to receive their receipt from when their escrow company paid their tax bill and see if that would have jumped up to really see what that number is.
So I guess the culmination of that is because of revamping that program, my guess is the net property tax revenue should go up, I would think. Because there were folks that were receiving exemptions that shouldn't have been.
Well, not net property tax going up, but the amount of money that New York State would pay of people's property bills would decrease. Because STAR is kind of the oddball exemption. Typically, every other exemption results in other parts of the population paying more. STAR is simply out of your $2,000 school tax bill, you pay $1,400 and the state pays $600. So with less STAR exemptions out there, the state would end up paying less. Based upon my guess, it was well worth New York State to do this, to weed this out. Unfortunately, there's not a state database for assessors to check. You know, when we get a new STAR exemption, we can check people within Tompkins County. But to check everybody else, we would have to go county by county to do so.
Mm-hmm.
This registration process is, you know, if you try to register twice with your Social Security number, if you're married, and they can tie that together. So it's a good step in the right direction. But with all of the state doing, just take it all over.
Well, even with the state, in essence, being able to keep more of their money, that's a benefit to us because a lot of it they just send right back to us anyway. They're very generous that way. So,
yeah, There is going to be an issue with new owners who receive the prior owner's registration notice. So we have had, I think, four people who registered with New York and never applied with us. So unfortunately, they're not going to receive the STAR exemption. My guess is when a politically connected person doesn't receive their STAR exemption because they registered and didn't apply, the state legislature will change that, and we're keeping track of those people and making sure.
Okay. Thanks.
Will.
Thanks, Jim. Jay, back to the tax freeze, rebate checks or whatever. What I heard you say was that those would be going to the portion of the county who are not in the Ithaca City School District. Did I hear you correctly on that? Or?
Correct. The Ithaca City School District was the only school district that went above the tax cap and hence is not eligible for the freeze check this fall.
This fall. Okay, got it. And you used an example, $14 or $16. Is that based on anything, or were you just guessing?
Just throwing out the numbers. You know, last year when Joe looked at it, it was $7 for county. You know, if it's all going to be depending upon your school district, depending upon your property's value, any changes in exemption, changes in value, changes in ownership percent. There's so many variables that can go in that there's really no way to guess what your check will be.
Okay. You also were talking about having assessments on portions of the community, and I had to wince when I heard you mention the cigarette streets. As you're sure you're aware, those folks have been dealing with a lot of misery having to do with our construction project. How do you choose which neighborhoods you do
Everything we do is based upon data. Uh-huh. So we're constantly reviewing where the market's moving based upon how those sales are comparing to our assessments. Okay. Or if there are no sales, how those listings are, you know, in the case of a dead market. But luckily here we can have enough sales, and if they're constantly selling for more than what our assessment is, we need to go in and review those values and move them up. If they're constantly selling for less than what our assessment are, we go in and review those values down. So we're constantly trying to stratify the market based upon county, town, neighborhood. And then we really get into our appraiser's feel of what their town is. Because I can get down to a neighborhood code or a property type, but they may be able to say, hey, I need to look at this street. You know, I need to look at Dart Drive in the village of Lansing.
Thank you.
Nate.
Hey, Jay, you were saying that there's recruitment challenges with in the assessment department. What kind of qualifications does an assessor have generally? Like, you know, what kind of schooling, what kind of background?
Ideally, some sort of economics, mathematics, some sort of that kind of an engineering background. And then it's really what level can you bring someone in and train them? You know, if for a data collector, where I started at, if you're breathing, you can pretty much, and Brian, yep, who started as a data collector in the assessment office, you know, if you're breathing, you can be trained to do so. But to bring someone in as a commercial appraiser, you need that experience, the classroom work to do so.
Okay. I was just curious.
Anyone else? Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Irene. Board of Elections is next. They have no OTR requests, and it is Section 4, page 19.
Hello. As Jim said, our budget's pretty straightforward this year. You will see that in 2015, all of our expenditures are going down as well as our revenues. The reason for that is next year is a local year, which we're going to explain a little bit later, and so we have less participation, which means less expenditures.
As she said, next year we have only local elections. Therefore, we were able to absorb the decrease in our target with no countywide primary expected. Looking ahead in 2016, though, it's a president just to look ahead to next year at this time. 2016 is a presidential election year, and it means there possibly could be three countywide primaries, and we will need the monies to be restored in our target plus one-time money to cover the normal extra presidential primary worker that we have each presidential election year.
Our full-time equivalents have stayed the same. When the voting machines were first starting and we were trying to learn how to do all the new processes, we felt it was easier to take our staff that we had that were already trained and move them to 40 hours. So that happened a long time ago, and we were able to keep levels the same since then. And we don't have any OTRs because, as we explained, we absorbed that. We've had some cost savings here and there in other accounts, too, that also helped us now that we're really familiar with the machines and we know exactly what they need.
And so some of the things that we're looking for in the future is some better reports before on immediately following the election. On election night, we hope to have some in, more comprehensive reports this year after, you know, the day after the election that would include turnout, undervotes, overvotes, things that weren't available in the past on an ED basis. One of the things that we're working with ITS on is in the GIS department is to try to get an online voter information module that voters can use. We're trying to mimic one that has been used in Monroe County for several years and where their voters can, if they file for an absentee ballot, receive the absentee ballot, they can actually track the absentee ballot online, make sure that it's been received by us and all that. We're confident that we can do that. That will probably not happen this year, but we're shooting for this to be in place next year.
And as you can see, it will save us a $4,500 a year maintenance fee alone, and I don't even know what the cost of the program is through our vendor, so we're not even pursuing that.
Questions. Republicans first and then Democrats.
Does that mean I get to leave first?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone have any questions for BOE? Michael.
A couple. Just out of curiosity, we just had a primary election. How many voters at the polls use the special voting devices for disabled people?
Zero.
None.
Same number as for every election since 2010.
And secondly, how are our machines holding up, the new ones? Are they going to give us a lot of years value for what we have? Or are we going to have to start thinking about putting money away to buy replacement machines? How are they looking?
I think on a whole they're looking pretty well. We have had some individual scanners that have had problems, not on election day, but so far we've been able to catch any problem with a scanner during our test checking process or during our quarterly maintenance, and every once in a while one will come up that's, you know, not something's not functioning with it. I can tell you as far as tabulating, though, they have been spot on every election. Every audit has come through spot on with no questions asked. But, it's hard to say. You talk with other, other places. I know the state has talked, and I've actually talked with some other people, some election administrators from other areas of the country, and have been using scanners for 20 years. And generally, the scanners hold up pretty well. Yeah, as long as they don't get dropped off the truck like we had one happen during shipping this time around. But if they're treated well, which we really work hard to make sure they're treated well, they should last well, last a long time.
We do have a five-year maintenance agreement with them now, and when we consolidated polling sites, we were able to have extra machines on hand. So that helped as well. And we're very fortunate in Tompkins County because we're one of the only counties that still has grant money left.
Has what money left?
Grant money.
Peter Stein, Carol Chalk, Will. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, very quickly, I know there's nothing we can do about this, but I read an interesting article in the newspaper recently about some state where they, in order to vote, you had to be registered in advance, that you come in and register for each election every time you're going to vote. And what that does is it completely obviates all of the business about checking for that, that you have the appropriate credentials with you, and that all of that business goes on long before the election. So the problems that some places have about long lines go away. You just come up and you're registered, and then you vote, and that's that. So I don't know. I found that intriguing. But we don't have any. We don't have that problem in New York. Is that right or not?
Well, we certainly don't have you vote. You don't have to register for every election. That's true. And
we really go out of our way. Like, for instance, we had a court order during the primary because someone wanted to vote because they didn't register in time. But they had registered, but they didn't register correctly, didn't respond to all the notices we sent, and then showed up and decided that they were going to force the issue that they wanted to vote, and the judge did let them. As far as long lines, we did implement a new procedure this year that we're going to be working on. We trained all our poll workers that the inspector's table is where the long lines start. And we're taking poll site managers, and we're going to have them look up any voter that's not in the poll book and make sure that they get a provisional or affidavit ballot or call our office so that the line can keep going at the inspector table while the poll site manager is working with the Board of Elections. So we're hoping that will help a lot, too.
Carol Chuck.
I was looking at the contracts pages. It's Appendix B. On page 3 is a contractor for the Board of Elections. It's National Timesharing, Inc. of, what is it, $26,000? And so can you tell me about that one? There's another one as well.
Yeah, that's been on. National Timesharing is the company that essentially manages the software for our voter registration database and coordinates it with the statewide database. And that's been an ongoing contract for 25, 30 years.
It's an interesting name. You don't take your staff off to the Caribbean timeshare.
No, it has nothing to do with that kind of thing, no.
And then I don't know whether to ask you or facilities, but for the Board of Elections, under facilities, we're paying a realty company $44,000 for rent for the Board of Elections. Is that something that we – what is that? Is that the – for machine storage, and
yes.
Do we really have no place else that we could store? How many square feet of space do you need?
It's about 3,000 square feet, and we use pretty much all of it. We use it to store machines, to do all of our quarterly maintenance, our test decking, preparing the machines for shipping. We do our training of all of our poll site managers there.
All our voting booths are there, tables, chairs. And when they spread out to actually set up for the election, they take every single spot. It's really hard, actually, to get around. They just have enough spots. It's 108 steps to just get one machine ready for election.
Well, on that, what are the security arrangements to make sure that there's no tampering at that site?
Are you talking at the site itself?
At the storage site.
We have motion detectors in there. I mean, from the outside to get in, you know, we all have fobs, but if somebody were to get in, there's motion detectors in there that would set off an alarm.
Okay.
And, you know.
Plus, we have procedures. So what we have is we call election mode. Once ballots are starting to be generated, mm-hmm. You have to go in by teams. A Republican can't run in and get, you know, like some kind of supplies they need. They have to wait until the Democrat is there as well.
Okay. And what is our protocol for retaining the actual physical ballots that people have marked?
We have to hold on to them for 22 months after the election. Usually we hold them for 2 years. But
we actually store all those at that center as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Julie? I didn't see your hand.
I just wondered if you finished counting all the votes, the contested ones for the primary.
Yes. All done. And certified results, I'm pretty sure, are up on our website now.
Thank you.
Facilities is next. It is Section 4, page 112. They have two OTRs, 16 and 17. And Arel is at the microphone. Go ahead, Arel.
Okay, I'm trying to bring up my presentation. Bear with me briefly here. Yes, good evening. The Facilities Division budget, just going through this very quickly, been a slight decrease, about $30,000 and $35,000 in our budget as a result of the target reduction. Did not have a major impact in our operations. Our budget includes two budgeting units, our operations budget, which is basically staffing, maintenance, supplies and products for maintaining county facilities. And then the other budgeting unit is our utilities, taxes, insurance that pays utility bills, property insurance, taxes for some of our properties, and also rents. So the rent that Carol mentioned for Board of Elections is paid by the Facilities Division's 1621 budgeting unit. Our full-time equivalents did increase by 1.4, so about a 4.4 increase, but it was absorbed within our existing target. We just transferred funding that was, I think Joe mentioned it before, funding that had been set aside for lease payments. Had we not moved forward with the Human Services Building addition for the day reporting program, so we had money set aside. You remember a couple of years ago, we had looked at leasing space at Center Ithaca, and that fell through, so that funding had been in place for that, and it had been sitting there if we had not moved forward with the Human Services Building Addition Project. So that funding was moved into our operations budgeting unit to fund one maintenance mechanic trainee position, as well as to move our electrician position from a part-time to a full-time position. So that's brought us up to 33 FTEs. This is the graph that I've shown for, I think, 20 years, because I've been here 20 years. And the years that I've not included it, I know legislators have asked for it, so I just do that out of habit. But this basically shows on our maintenance side, it shows the square footage that we maintain, which is kind of the blue in the background. The center graph is what our annual maintenance costs are going dating back to the year 2000, and the front yellow one is square feet maintained per person. So as a result of that increase in our FTEs for an electrician position and that maintenance mechanic trainee, you can see that on the far right, I'm trying to see if there's a mouse, so this number here So now we're maintaining an average of about 50,600 square feet per maintenance person, which dropped from what it was currently at 60,000, which is good. Whoops. Sorry. And you see back in 2000, it was on average about 42,000. 42,000 square feet per person. Our total, I'm used to a separate mouse. I should have brought one. But the 430,000 square feet on the upper right, that's the total square footage of building square feet that we maintain. Back in 2000, it was on the far upper left about 340,000. So we've increased about 100,000 square feet in 15 years. Our cost for our projected maintenance cost would be $209,174 on kind of the right center. And this is the one for our cleaning operations. That one has stayed stable from last year to this year. We're maintaining on average about 337,000 square feet for cleaning, which is about 20,000 square feet per cleaner, which is up from 2,000. On average, each cleaner was 14,000 square feet. So that, as you know, is still a challenge. And a couple of years ago, the legislature funded a half-time cleaning position that is dedicated almost entirely to the new Human Services Annex building, but also does the human rights space. We do have two OTRs. They're one-time OTRs. They're for equipment. For a tractor, in the wintertime, if you're up early before 7 walking around some of the downtown properties, you'll see we've got a tractor that plows the sidewalks and then also salts the sidewalks at the same time. And so that one is about 10 years old, so we're looking at replacing that one. We're looking at using rollover from this year's rollover or last year's rollover towards funding part of that tractor purchase. And the second rollover is also for equipment. It's a flatbed truck that we use year-round. In the wintertime, it's for salting our parking lots, all our parking lots up on the hill as well as downtown. And also during the summer, it's used for landscaping operations, for mulching, and for doing just landscaping work around the county. And that one, the one-time $10,000 is what we expect to get at auction for the current flatbed truck. That's what Jeff Lucas from Highway projects that we could get for that truck. Those are the only two OTRs that we have.
Thank you. Questions, Brian?
I see where you wanted to. You have an electrician position now that's half time, and you want to go to full time. Has there been any discussion about? We heard from Jeff Smith last week, and I know that one of the city electricians takes care of the traffic lights, and he's having a problem with the contracted traffic light person or company or whatever. Could this kind of pigtail on one another?
As far as us providing support to the city, you're saying?
Or? No. We have traffic lights, mostly blinkers, in the county. And when there's a problem, they have to, according to Jeff, have to go to their contracted vendor who's out of Syracuse. And
If we could pick up Biscay Support or Assist Highway, you're saying? Actually, I think our electrician did out in Lansing about a month ago. I saw him out there working on one of the blinkers, and I was surprised because I wasn't sure why they were out there working on a blinker.
I took it, and probably Joe knows better, I took it that we're almost thinking that we would not have that contract and try to do it in-house and or in conjunction with someone else or something like that. So if we're increasing this position, if we had some cross-training or whatever, that may actually benefit both departments.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to know the quantity of blinkers or lights that they have. I mean, the reason we're increasing is because we're just overburdened in electrical, you know, work orders that we just can't keep up at the current rate with just a part-time electrician. So I'm not sure. I have no idea how many are serviced by highway of these blinkers and such.
You said 15.
Okay.
He sent me two numbers about four.
You got to use the microphone.
Thanks. That was one of the information requests from last session, and Jeff Smith got the count to me today, and it's in your inboxes probably. It was, I'm pretty sure it was four, with one to be added soon.
Four lights?
Yeah.
So, okay, so we're only talking five lights. Yeah, I was wondering that when he said that last week, because a lot of those are on state routes, which the county would not service. They would have to be through state DOT. So that probably sounds about right. I don't know. Just some thought.
Okay.
And I have to ask it in the form of a question. So, right? we'll think about that, right?
Yeah, as I said, Jeff has not approached me directly, but we can discuss it and see if it's something that we can help him out with.
Michael.
I believe this year the city of Ithaca has levied two new fees against us, one for sidewalk districts and one for stormwater districts. I wondered, have we been billed for those yet? And have we seen the city make any improvements to our sidewalks, for example?
We've been billed, at least the last time I checked when I was preparing the budget, for the sidewalk assessments. And no, they have not done anything as far as any improvements on sidewalks. So I think I'd indicated that to Joe before, because the prior to them implementing this the sidewalk assessment fee, there were certain of our properties where the city is obligated to make the improvements and repairs. It's basically anything that is a result of a tree roots, you know, heaving the sidewalk. Those were not allowed to replace or repair. Everything else we're required to do so. And the worst one is at our human services building. It's on the Seneca Street side. If you walk there from here, it's between kind of the entrances to that parking lot off of Seneca Street. And it heaves quite a bit. So we've had to do just some patching to basically correct the elevation difference between the adjoining slab sections, sidewalk sections. But we've talked to the city for 8 years about replacing that. And 8 years ago, they said it was going to happen that year, and we're still waiting. So my concern was, if they're not even getting to those high-priority sidewalks that we've been talking to them about for years, now that they have to address all, you know, at least city sidewalks, I just don't know how it's going to be prioritized and whether that will ever – those sections of sidewalk will ever be repaired. So I'm not as optimistic. I know before when the city, this is about 8 years ago, when the city contracted to do a lot of those sidewalk improvements, and you may recall they did a lot of the corners for ADA ramp on the corners, that moved very quickly. And I think the following year they decided to do that in-house. Once they brought it in-house, there was not much progress, at least for our county properties, for repairs on our sections. So, no, at this point, they have not done any work on any of our county properties.
And approximately how much is the cost to us on these assessments?
Jay's left. I think it's like $9,000
to $9,500. Leslie, and then Peter.
So while we're on the topic, since we've been already billed by the city, is there a charge back to the city if we do the work? Did you say we did some of that work already by the DSS building?
No, I mean, it was minor. Oh, that's a good question. I know in the past when it was our responsibility, and if we were issued a notice and we didn't move forward with making an improvement, and if the city moved in and made the you know, the repair, then they would charge you the cost of the repair plus a 25% administrative fee.
Oh, dear.
So it'd be nice if we could do it that way, if we did it and charge the city. But I didn't read it in their whatever policy or such where it said if the homeowner moved forward. I know that they said if you had done it prior to them implementing the assessment fee, that if you had done improvements on your property within, I can't remember what year, a couple of years, that you could submit to get a credit against that $9,000 assessment. But we haven't done any improvements in the last 2 years.
I mean, I'm not advocating for it. I was just asking. City, leave us alone.
Well, the thing is, as much as we'd like to make that improvement, if we start to jackhammer the sidewalk, the city arborist will stop us. They've done it before when we've done work at the old jail, and they'll fine us. So we're kind of stuck. So if you have any pull with the city, you can mention that to them. It'd be great.
Peter and then Dooley.
Well, just an observation. I mean, it seems to me if the city is levying a tax on sidewalks, the assumption is that that gives them the funds to repair it, and that they, just because you pay the tax doesn't mean they'll repair your sidewalk, because presumably they will do the most urgent repairs first, even if it takes your money to do it, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, assuming that they're doing this in good faith and that's raising enough money to fix all the problems, then all the problems will be fixed. Maybe not tomorrow, but at some point.
I mean, yes. We just don't know when that
We don't know when
is.
That is,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Joel and then Dooley.
And this is editorial. This isn't budget, but it raises some real interesting liability issues. If there's a trip and fall on a sidewalk in front of one of our buildings and there's a defect in the sidewalk, where does liability go?
That's true.
Dooley? Thank you, Joe.
I thought that the city sidewalk program was divided into, I guess they're called neighborhoods, and the people who live in the neighborhoods get to say what the priorities should be, and it's not clear to me that the county is included in that, in any of those discussions, so that I would like to know more about that. I had a question about the new stormwater fee. Is that included in your estimates for 2015?
Yes, it is.
And how much did that amount to?
It's in that same order.
I think it's around $11,000.
Yeah, that's my record. A little more than 10.
Anything else?
Yes. I was waiting for Arell to look up whatever he's looking up.
Well, I think he was looking up the $11,000 number.
Yeah, that sounds correct.
And from what you said to Mike's question, we have not been billed that yet.
No, we have not.
Are we participating in the Board of Public Works discussions about how to achieve credit for what we do? I know residences seem to be not being included, but I wasn't sure whether government buildings could participate in the Board of Public Works discussions about priorities.
Actually, I don't know. I haven't really inquired about that.
I notice in the general text what you're responsible for with buildings. You mentioned demolition. I wish you would include the word deconstruction.
Okay. Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm looking at page 122, and that's the utility payments, which takes nobody to do it. So there, some other staff member pays those bills, nobody in facilities.
For utilities?
Well, I'm looking at page 122 under utilities, and FTE is zero.
Yeah. Yes, a staff person does process the invoices and such, but it's minimal. Yes, somebody does in our office receive the invoice, actually receive two invoices for every account, a NYSIG bill and then one for Integris for electric, and then NYSIG and I think Direct Energy for gas. So she processes those, and I mean, I can show that, but it's minimal.
Well, it made me wonder if maybe the finance department was doing it instead.
I wish, no.
Okay, thank you.
Carol.
So as I understand what the city is doing, they are asking people who own property to be responsible not only for the property that's in front of your, that's on your land, but to recognize the cost of maintaining all the storm sewers and the creek beds and whatever water runs into. And so they want you to be responsible for our share, or us to be responsible for our share of what we allow to run off rather than get absorbed the way water would into the ground if our pavement wasn't there. So one of the ways one can lower that cost in the future is to put in more absorbent surfaces.
Excuse me, but your question is?
So my question is, are we starting to think about, is there anything in this budget that would start to do that? We've talked about porous pavement, you know, asphalt, and, you know, or in future budgets, is that something that you see that you'd start building in? Or green roofs, or whatever it is that we might need to do?
We did look at it. If we were to look at it, we would consider it if it were a new building project, such as when we did the health department. We actually did look at that for the asphalt pavement there, but because of the soil conditions, that would not have worked there. There was poor soil there, and there's still, I mean, we have issues with the asphalt up there. In this complex, all of the water does go into a dry well, so that does not go in the city's storm sewer system. But it's something that we would look at if we were to, and we will be doing resurfacing of parking lots throughout our county facilities over the next couple of years as part of that facilities restoration capital project. So those are things that we could look at. But most of the work that we'd be doing is in this complex, which already just goes into a dry well and, you know, percolates into the soil. It does not add to the city's storm sewer system.
So if that's our own dry well that we maintain, do we get credit for that? Does that get subtracted?
Yeah, that's something that we've talked to the city about, to take that into account as far as credit is against that assessment.
Great. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Arel.
Thank you.
We have IT next, and Greg is here. And IT is on section 4, page 172. They have no OTR requests, and Greg will be approaching.
Jim, as long as there's a pause, I forgot to ask to have Mike Lane's comments about weights and measures included in the minutes. I think it's important for us to think about that.
Okay.
And I guess, although I asked it to be put up on the website, Joe's explanation of what premium pay is also in the minutes, please.
Okay. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay. Well, thank you for the time this evening to review my hopefully simple budget. The first thing that I need to note is on these three lines, the expenditure and net local increases are exclusively due to the acceptance of two positions from the mental health department. They have been subsequently moved to ITS and will be reflected in the annual resolution. The first position is a security and privacy officer that was in mental health, intended to work for the entire county under compliance. We thought that IT was a more neutral place or department for that to be in, particularly with the recent policy efforts that we're making. And the second is the systems analyst position that has supported their application for the past over 10 years, over a decade, has been moved under ITS, and that has been moved over ITS to ITS at the beginning of 2014. On the revenue line item, the one thing you'll see decrease, and that's the difference of what we used to do for tax mapping for J for assessment. So we did agree to a reduction of $3,500. We still do receive a little bit of revenue from Jay just for managing the end one-to-one processing once a year for that effort. So there is a little bit of a difference there. The major influences for IT are probably at the top, no different than any other department. We are expecting 5 retirements within the next 5 years, 3 of which could happen within 1 year. So we are very concerned and planning our succession planning around that. And the reason for relocation of positions to ITS is the ability to support their efforts in mental health and in public health as we've made those decisions and directions for new software. So that has led to a centralization of IT employees and services, which has drastically changed not how we operate, but also our network has been upgraded in the past few years with the help of many people. But we're pretty much have finished that project between 2 data centers. There's always more work to do. And the last of it would be the recabling for the public safety building that we have funded already, partially through our capital project, through our telephone services, and partially through the renovation of the jail project for the expansion. Shared services just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, particularly for us and what we do for the villages and the towns and the cities in 2 areas. One is in public safety. We maintain all the records management for all police departments in the county, including state police, that just came on board our system in the last couple of months. So they are all now using the Spillman system for their responses. We also do a great deal with the county clerk's office in the records management side of things for shared services. And that is in structure is based off of what we started with LETS, but includes all of the municipalities in Tompkins County, and the Soil and Water Conservation District recently received a grant for that project of $149,000, of which will be spent some towards challenge industries, use professional services, more hardware and space on our network, some professional services, and some software licensing. The more we move forward with the business process improvements and smart offices initiatives out of Joe's office, out of county administration and personnel, the more likely it is that those are IT-based solutions. They just tend to be, you go through, we're involved in most of them, and we agree with them, but it's a very good program, and it gives the IT a seat at the table that results in some level of improvement on the IT side, or at least an understanding and direction that the department wants to go. So I wanted to plug that and let you know that we're out there participating in that. Mobility and mobile applications is a huge area for us that we're starting to explore in environmental health, and starting point in particular for probably restaurant inspections would be a big one, and the on-site wastewater treatment systems and the new permitting software called Excella. That will lead to more mobile applications in both mental health and public health. We're trying to come to an understanding and agreement of how those might be managed in the future as well. But there's a lot of home visits that are occurring, and we have a lot of additional security and protocol and procedures to follow for both those areas. Although we have 2 data centers in the county government downtown and at 55 Brown Road, we're starting to look at a third site where all of our critical data is also copied over to on a regular basis. And that may be in the Finger Lakes storage facilities that are at the old Seneca Army Depot, where our paper is located that was currently the paper that we've chosen to keep in its current form, that has historic value to it. So they have a data center there, and we're working on pricing probably a 2016 project. The next critical area that we're looking at doing or working on spending time in the next year is data classification, protection, and compliance. So you'll hear us speaking a lot of that. Acceptable use is just a start, but we have to do a better job as an organization defining who's responsible for what levels of data across the county. And there are policy and security development and training sessions that we're hoping to roll out in conjunction with some of those new policies. So we're starting to think about the end user, the employee, a little bit more in the coming year, as in the past years we've been focused primarily on the infrastructure and software. So that is a quick summary.
Questions for Greg? I have Mike, I have Peter.
I'm just wondering about the offsite disaster recovery.
Mike, sorry. I'm just curious about the offsite disaster recovery and planning, because we just won an award, didn't we, with records?
Yeah.
Are we going to try to consolidate those two?
That's all to increase the capacity for our current data centers,
right,
to host the new records. But once we get a better sense of how many additional records we're going to take through that program, then we'll be looking for something for offsite. But that'll be another phase of that project. But the first phase is indeed still focused inward.
Cool. Peter Stein, Mike Lane, Dooley Keeper.
Greg, a year or so, or a year and a half so, I had a conversation with you about a concern I had about the fact that inmates in the jail that want to make outside calls have to go through a contractor, and the rates are extremely high. And you discussed the possibility, or not the possibility, but you discussed when you did the reconfiguring of the telephones that you would reconfigure them in such a way that our security concerns would be able to be carried out without having a private party running that phone system, that we could do it ourselves. Will that happen? Is that part of that?
The first phase of that project is the recabling on the correction side, which needs to be done in order for us to put the new phones in, and that's scheduled to start on October 6th. We also have to recable the other side of the building for civil. When we proceed with the new phone system, the voice over IP phone system, if there's a decision that the county wants to take responsibility for hosting that phone service for inmates, then it is possible. We can look at it then, but we need to know that it's a part of the project, and you may see an increase in the cost of what was proposed in order to accommodate that new request.
Okay, thank you. When does that decision have to be made that it's...
We still, the bigger departments that we have yet to cut over to the new phone system include mental health and emergency response and the airport administration. So pretty soon, by the end of this year.
End of this year, okay.
Mike Lane and then Dooley.
Greg, a few weeks ago we had a power loss,
yes,
that closed us down at the government campus down here in the city. And it got me to thinking about the fact that what happens if we get a major long-term power loss? How are we backed up with our IT center here and the one that we have in the other location? Do we have any kind of generator capacity beyond batteries that we could rely on for several days, for example? Or are we going to go black when something like if we have a huge ice storm or something like that?
Well, I'm pleased to say that during that storm, neither one of our data centers went down. So we have a data center, primary data center at 55 Brown Road at the Annex C building. Both those locations have a large uninterrupted power supply unit in their data centers for which we have maintenance contracts for, and their buildings are also provided with generators. So there's a generator that sits at the back of Annex C, and there's a generator that sits in the back corner of the public safety or the public health building. If we needed to look at alternative sites, I'd be happy to do so. because you will lose connected the way that we're rolling out the phone system. They connect to a data port in front of the computer. So with when we roll out the new phones for HSB and we have a power outage, we have supplied enough UPS, which might save power for about 10 minutes of phone use for all the phones in the building. But after that, it becomes the phones go down the computer, and the computers will go down once away, right away. So a review of the generators at all the main buildings needs to be accounted for as the next step of that project.
So that might be something we might ask facilities at some point to take a look at?
And it has been discussed.
It was Joe and then Dooley.
Yeah, it was soon after that storm that we had a public works cabinet. We talked about the need for generators. And we've talked to Arell about that 2019 installment of the facilities restoration money and applying some of that to purchase and install some generators. So that's in our thinking right now. The first installments of the facilities plan are being pretty much committed for the basic stuff, the roofs, the driveways, and so forth. But we are beginning to weave that into the thoughts about how to invest in our buildings and where we should be putting generators in the future. And we're looking at 2019 as the year for that.
I do know I've read some articles recently even about where they do have backup generators that often their need for power has surpassed the capacity those generators can produce.
We put a sign in Annex C not to use the elevator as an example of that during the course of power outage. So, there we go.
Dooley.
Thank you. I'm looking at page 178. This is the GIS program. And notice that the staffing has gone way down, and wondered if you could remind me what's going on there.
There are two individuals in the county's GIS program that work directly for me. I'm not sure what information you're looking at, but it has been fairly consistent.
It's going from 1.95 to 1.2 FTEs.
I don't have an answer for you. There's two people that reside. The only distinction that may be reflected here is that one of the positions was reclassified to help with web work and web support of the new website.
That's where it is.
That's
so,
where it is.
Dooley, if you look at 177, you're going to see that there's been an increase in the email, web, internet staffing,
yes,
and a decrease in GIS, and that's Svetla.
Yes, correct? And Svetla Borowska. So the total number of GIS employees hasn't changed. We've just taken half for title or more and put it towards web development work, like the County Board of Elections office was alluding to earlier.
Thank you.
Carol.
So I want to preface what I'm going to ask by saying that I think that the work that you've done in the last year has really shown, you know, it's really come to fruition, you know, all of the struggle to get our systems up and running, to get our website, it all looks beautifully and seems to be functioning much better than it used to. But I have a question about, and maybe it's for Joe, I'm not quite understanding how we're going from a $1.38 million budget to a $1.46 million budget in this area with, which is a 5% increase without there being over target requests. Is this just an area that you said we need?
So the bump is, as Greg described when he began, the bump, I believe, is all attributable to some internal movements within the organization. So there is an internal consolidation of the IT function that is continuing to occur. A couple of mental health positions have migrated over from mental health to IT. So that's really what's affecting bottom line. County's bottom line is unaffected.
Okay.
But it's a movement. You'll see, I can't remember if mental health has an actual reduction or not, but there is a movement of target money out of mental health and over to IT. You recall this was done, was the first one in health with Katie. This has really worked out well because what had been dedicated to a single department has come over centrally. That department receives the services it needs, but when there's downtime, that person can be deployed doing some other things that benefit the county. So that's really worked well, and that's kind of the prototype for what Greg has done now with the mental health group.
Okay, yeah, no, I think that also probably answered some of Peter's question about how assessment. Didn't we do some of this with assessment at some point as well?
With the department, we used to provide for the tax mapping, but the assessment department has taken that responsibility back after we designed it.
Okay, well then.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg. Great job. And I want to echo what Carol said. Your department has just done a splendid job in the county over the last number of years, and I know your work continues to be ever more increasing. And I can only hear Joe's voice in my ear when he says it came from a place that had tons of people in IT, and we don't have nearly that amount. So I appreciate your work.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Julie Kiefer.
Could I ask, please, that Peter Stein's question about jail inmate phones be in the minutes?
Yes.
The answer to?
You can ask, and it will be.
Thank you.
DSS, Patricia Carey is in the house. And you are on at 7:10, Patricia. Is your whole team here? Yes, they are. Okay. So you may approach the bench.
Get sworn in.
Let me just say for everyone's information, Section 4, page 308 for social services, and there are no OTR requests.
Hello. Hello. So, here we go. We have some changes in our budget from last year, but the result is a very small change. And the change, the $137,000, is a lot of little gives and takes, revenues increasing in one place, expenses decreasing in another place. It's kind of all over the map in each of the divisions within the department. We have downsized a bit. We have about 3.4 staff, less staff than we had last year. We have no OTRs. And our challenges will be that the New York State Department of Health continues to state that they are going to take over Medicaid. We've been hearing that for a long time. We haven't really seen any change in, much change in the work we do. But it is a constant message to us that that is a plan. So we can't really anticipate what is going to happen next year. It's up in the air. The other challenge we face, our Medicaid director is retiring after 43 years at the Department of Social Services, and that is huge. Medicaid is probably the most complicated division that we have in terms of understanding the rules and regulations. So we are going to move forward, but it's going to be a big challenge for staff, especially with this looming takeover. That's it. I knew there was something else. The other person who's retiring is our temporary assistance director. That's the second largest division within our department, and that, again, is going to be a challenge.
Let me begin the questions, and maybe I missed it, but your 2014 modified is $48,975,000, and the 2015 recommended is $1,000,001 less than 2014. How did we achieve that? And
oh. Is this thing on?
Yeah, is this on? Yeah.
It's a comedy. It's a comedy.
I'll let Tom answer that.
Yeah.
As the commissioner said, whether you looked only at the expenditure summary line here or the revenues or the difference between them, the only true answer would be a complicated answer. We have 13 different budgetary programs that are being summarized here.
Well, give us a semi-complicated answer,
okay.
I guess, is what I...
That's what it is. So within those 13 budgetary areas, some have increased revenues and decreased revenues. I don't really know what more to say.
It's a lot of money. Is there one division that did, like, just cut a bunch of stuff? It almost seems like we lost some money.
Well, we haven't lost any programs. So one area where expenditures were significantly less, is in the larger Medicaid program is budgetarily broken out into two mandate programs. One of those two programs is referred to as Medicaid local, I think. And the expenditure part of that, in past years, the majority of the expenditures have been for Medicaid transportation. That is one area that New York State has made good on its stated intentions to take over Medicaid. That process started last year, and when we budgeted in the 2014 budget, what we anticipated the impact of that would be, we underestimated the impact of that. That's one program where our expenditures, where our budget in 2014 was much higher than it had to be. There's no net local cost follow-on from that. Whether we expended those monies out of that, if we had those expenditures, they would have been reimbursed with federal and state money. We don't have those expenditures in our 2015 budget. So while that is contributing to this $1.1 million expenditure decrease, that particular area is not contributing to our to the revenue change.
Joe, maybe wants to. I have you, Peter. Joe wants to jump in here.
Yeah, I think the way we can characterize what's happening there. First of all, if you look at the top line, which is your $1,000,001 total expenditures, that's really what you're looking at, the reduction. I think your eye really needs to go to the net local because there's so much movement that happens within the revenues, and that's what Tom and Patricia were talking about as well. So generally we're seeing stability in this department, which is good news because this has been the one department that over time has carried the mandates and has seen very large increases in mandated costs. And as we tried to say at the beginning of this process, the mandates are beginning to moderate. Tom talked about an important thing that's happening with Medicaid, which is actually we've seen a reduction in Medicaid costs from year to year, so that's offsetting growth that would otherwise be occurring in that budget. And as you look across the board, you see uncharacteristic moderation of the cost of the mandated programs run by DSS. So when you combine that moderation, that almost flattening, and maybe even a reduction, I think, in the mandated side of the budget, when you combine that with what's happening on the personnel side, the department has taken a small reduction in personnel, that's what produces the good numbers that you see on this page, which, again, top line, actual reduction in spending, bottom line, a surprisingly flat budget 2014 to 2015.
Peter Stein.
Well, I certainly know from experience when you have a complicated calculation like this, you can't really go in and pick out something and say, well, there's the answer, because a lot of things are interrelated. But it did seem to me that there's a little bit of a discontinuity between what you've just said and what Patricia said at the beginning, namely that New York has been telling us that the state has been telling us that they're going to be taking over the Medicaid, parts of the Medicaid costs, but they haven't. So those two things seem to me somewhat in conflict.
What the state is saying they're going to, what I was referring to is the state takeover for processing Medicaid applications. So that means we would potentially have fewer staff, up to maybe 15 fewer staff, if the state actually took over Medicaid. Medicaid transportation is it's a cost that is billed to Medicaid. So Medicaid found a provider that was able to figure out a way to provide that transportation less expensively, so that cost has gone down.
Okay, that explains it. Thank you.
Carol Chalk.
So, yeah, I'm looking at the staff positions and the changes, and there isn't a one-to-one correlation, but I do see that we're going down six welfare examiners. We pick up a few, two and a half, it looks like they're promoted principal welfare examiners, but, boy, it leaves an awful lot, of just processing a written application at the state level without having anybody locally who's responsive to the needs of our clients or potential people who would like to be our clients. So are there avenues open to people that – are there going to be avenues open to people that weren't before for them to appeal? Something that's just, decided on the basis of a piece of paper rather than sitting across the desk from somebody? As the economy,
I will say that I am not pleased with the state's plan for those reasons. We believe that having someone sit down and talk to you about a range of things that might be going on in your life, Medicaid might be just one of them. That's better service for our community. The state does not agree with me. Doesn't agree with me on a lot of things, but that's one they don't agree with me on, and they plan to move forward. We have indicated to the state that if there's any opportunity for us to continue to provide service here, that we would take advantage of that. And so we've put that in writing to the state, and we may have an opportunity at some point in the future to negotiate something with them so we can retain some responsibility here locally.
And on the welfare section of that, is that all linked to Medicaid? Or
that's the temporary assistance is in a separate department at the state level, and they are not moving to take over the responsibility for temporary assistance.
So the six that we're losing there, we're going from 19 to 13 senior social welfare examiners.
Well, what's the difference between senior and principal?
Can you show me the page?
Yeah, it's page section 4, page 309, and it's that page where you list all the FTEs, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Let me just remind you, Patricia said at the beginning that they were down three employees from what they were last year, not six.
No, I understand that. What I was looking at was, so where are the changes happening?
I can tell.
And
well,
it's one or two, it's one thing, but when you get to six in one area.
I can tell you the three positions that no longer exist. It's one of them is a case supervisor B position in children's services, a case supervisor A position
and Children's Services, and a senior social welfare examiner position. I believe there that would cover it. What's the point?
Point four.
Oh, that would be a principal social welfare examiner who was part-time.
Right. So the line that says social welfare examiner, but not so, I'm sorry, senior social welfare examiner, where it's going down six is what I'm asking
so
about.
In our 2014 budget, there were 19 positions in that title, 19 full-time positions in that title. In our 2015 budget, there are 13. Let me just count one, two. So three of those are positions that we have eliminated when persons retired or otherwise left the service of the department. The other six, I believe, are other circumstances. We reclassified one of those positions to a senior principal social welfare examiner. We classified one of those positions to a principal social welfare examiner. Those are both upgrades in title. We reclassified one of those positions downward to a social welfare examiner. I'm sorry, I miscounted earlier. There were four positions in that title that became vacant, have become vacant in the course of this year, so year to date, that we chose not to refill, reorganize the eligibility units. So I think that accounts for the 47.
Yeah, I think basically we have been reorganizing as things present themselves, as caseload shift. So we may promote someone to a principal because they need to be signing off on more cases in a certain area. So within the department, we're constantly moving. We have thousands of cases. So at any given time, you may have a safety net caseload that's rising, but our temporary assistance caseload is going down. So you may be making some decisions about staffing in different ways. And this is what we're anticipating for 2015.
So a general trend, if you're looking at 10 years ago versus 5 years ago versus now, the trend of caseload per examiner, what?
I would say they have increased because the number of individuals that we serve has increased. But another thing to factor in is that the state has done a fairly good job in some areas in technology. So a lot of our processes are automated in a way that was unthinkable 20 years ago. So a lot of times you can type something in and it actually calculates things for you now, whereas 20 years ago you were doing that with some sort of slide ruler or something.
Loveland and then Brian.
Date yourself, why don't you? Slide rulers. I have a few questions. Something you said just brought up one question for me. Does reorganization mean that some folks will be laid off?
It could mean that.
It could mean that. And can you give me a sense of what we might be looking at? One, two, three?
It could be up to 15. So what we're doing now is, and Tom indicated that when people are leaving, we are trying really hard not to fill those positions so that we're not in a position to lay off. So if the state takes it over, I can't imagine it's going to take it over next year. It just would be incredible if they did at the pace they're going. So if we can, through attrition, absorb the work and not hire people, that's our goal.
Okay.
And staff have been informed of this. They've been they are kept up on the trends and what Medicaid says it's going to do and what it isn't going to do. So we're trying really hard to keep ourselves balanced, because if we lose too many staff and don't fill it, then we're not going to be able to process the applications that are continuing to come in on a daily basis. So we're really managing that. That's why I'm saying it's going to be a huge issue next year as we sort of lose people to retirement and how and when do we fill those positions.
Jim, I have a couple of other questions. Thank you for that Tricia. I might have some follow-up for you and Joe later on.
Could I just kind of wedge in here, though? I want to make sure for the viewers at home. So the budget that is before you tonight, if your question was, are there layoffs required by the budget that's before you tonight with these minus three positions, I believe the answer is no.
No.
It is what is on the horizon that could happen if the state takes over the Medicaid administration system. So the budget that you're looking at, the budget that you'll be asked to consider as part of what you do, there's no layoffs.
There are no layoffs.
Listen, could I dovetail off your question real quick?
Sure. If it's just all right with the chair, you can jump on.
Go ahead. If the state does take over, so you're envisioning like a centralization like in Albany or something.
Exactly.
It would be, we're going to take it over and just have the employees here.
That has been floated. Again, the state hasn't said, when they say take over, they haven't really said what that means. So we have talked about that we would be willing to have our employees become state employees and do the work here. Again, our message to the state is we should be involved locally. These are our people, and we need to have we need to be working with them. And that's our message to them. Okay. But, yes, please, thank you, Joe. We are not laying people off.
Okay.
All right,
say that again. Because
we're back to you, Leslin.
Thank you, Leslin.
I do. So the question about the how the budget is so much smaller was one I had. But I'm looking very specifically at two programs, if that's what they call, medical assistance, which is on page 214, 314 of Section 4. And there is a drastic difference in your actuals for 2012, 13, and 14 to what the target is for 2015. Help me out here, Tom.
Yep. That's the program that I mentioned earlier. I guess I misremembered the title, Medical Assistance, Medicaid Local. That's the one where we vastly underestimated what the impact would be on our expenditures out of that program. With this year, with this, I think, 6 months' experience of this year and whatever portion of last year followed from the state's takeover of the Medicaid transportation function, we were able to project that we way overfunded this year. So the difference between what is in this year's budget and next year's budget in that program is entirely due to our bringing our budget figures in line with what our actual expenditures will be now that the state has taken over Medicaid transportation.
And I will say that when we were looking at the 2014 budget, the messages we were getting from the states where the counties where Medicaid had taken over that responsibility was not that they were saving money. The downstate operations were, and some of the upstate counties in the North County were losing money, and that they were spending it at record pace. So we did not anticipate that we would have a change in that budget line during 2014.
And then the next one for me is on page 319, the state training schools. That is 50%. Well, it's been fluctuating 1 year, then the next it goes down, then the next year up, then the next year down. What's up with that?
That's the, if I'm correct, those are the OCFS placements. Mm-hmm. So those are children who are placed in the custody of the state, and then they go to someplace like Lou Gossett or some other training school. They call them training schools, but
thank you. What is that? Did y'all go to some training school?
The cost is incredible. It's, you know, it could be $1,000 a day. So if you have one child in there, it could be up to $1,000 a day. So if you have one youth in a facility, you're going to feel it. If you have no youth in a facility, right now we don't have any youth in the facilities, but we don't have any control over that.
No control. So this number all depends on how many children are.
Our budget figures vary year to year, and our actual expenditures vary incredibly year to year because each child is so expensive, and there is no projecting how long or how many kids will be in. The other factor complicating things in recent years is that these are state facilities, and The state bills for those expenditures in a multi-step process that does not conclude for years after the dates of service. So we are paying in 2014 for services provided sometimes in 2012, 2011. Also, the state has been trying to get out of the business of providing that service.
Right.
So they've been closing down facilities. Right. But they have a bunch of fixed costs that are then being distributed among the remaining beds in the state facilities. So that's what's contributing to the, I'm not sure if it's $1,000 a night, but it's extremely expensive. Those per night placements are going way, way up. So even when the number of nights of service go down, our expenditures sometimes go up. Having said all that, for the past year and a half, which is what we look at when we're budgeting for our next year request, our expenditures were much less than the year and a half that we were looking at last year at this time. So we didn't want to ask you for money that we hopefully won't need next year.
We hope you don't need it. Thank you.
Brian and Dooley.
Thanks. My question has to do with your pending retirements. And we on the legislature over the last few years have been, I think, very committed to succession planning in all departments, especially when you have upper management like that. And it sounds like you got like 80-some years of experience heading out the door. I'm just curious, are these positions where you would need to go outside, or you have internal candidates that you are doing some succession planning now, or?
Yes. We're driven by civil service in these positions, so no one from the outside is going to be able to come in and do this work. It's going to be promotional, and both people in these positions have taken it upon themselves to nurture staff who they think could step into their positions at some point in time if they score high enough on the test.
Mm-hmm.
So we believe that we have staff who are ready to step in. In the Medicaid department, we've split her position into two because the it's so huge and there's so many different kinds of Medicaid. Cases are processed differently depending upon what kind of Medicaid you're working with. So we determine that, and there's 35 staff in that division. So we decided to break that up into two, the job that one person was doing, break that up into two. So we've been trying to be creative in that way so that we're not burdening people too much. But, yes, that's a good point.
Thanks.
Dooley.
Thank you. I'm looking at page 322, which is emergency aid to adults. And the revenue, the local revenue, goes way up, and I was wondering where that's from.
I'm not sure about that label, Dooley. I believe that each of those three lines consolidate several lines in the budget. And I believe, I'm not positive, but I believe that what is being consolidated into local revenues includes repayments of assistance. Joe's nodding yes, so.
Anyone else?
No, I have more. That was one. Page 326, that's SNAP, which is down. And I wondered, since we keep hearing about the increasing need for food assistance, why this is down.
So the expenditures, SNAP is a federal program. The benefits appear nowhere in our budget. They are paid directly by the federal government. Unlike most of the other programs that we administer, the benefits themselves appear nowhere. So all that's being reflected here are our administrative costs in administering the program. It looks like there is a slight, a less than one FTE difference from 1 year to the next. How those, so the figures that are in this section of the budget reflect how we claim reimbursement for staff. That in turn is driven for staff in these programs by quarterly time studies that they do. So there is some variation from the 2 weeks of this quarter that those staff are completing their time studies and the 2 weeks from the next quarter and so on. That is more or less random, separate from any program decisions we make. So I think that's within, I think this one FTE difference is within the kind the range of variation that we often see.
Yeah, and we did move someone out of food stamps or SNAP as we were shifting around. We anticipate that's going to happen next year, perhaps.
Okay. I am now looking in Appendix B, which is where I saw lots of the medical transportation decreases. There's an acronym, I don't know what it means, STEHP. What is that?
Let me think for a moment.
Dude, it's funny if you make it up.
Sorry? First, the S is solutions, and the EH is emergency housing. I'm not sure about the T and the P. I'm guessing P is program. So it is state. It's a grant that local districts can apply for from New York State. I believe it combines federal and state monies.
It's HUD money and some state housing money.
And it's a consolidation of what, until I think 2 years ago, were separate funding streams administered by the state into a single one.
Okay, so that makes sense. It's Red Cross and Rescue Mission, it appears all those places. Mm-hmm. So there's also cooperative extension. Food stamp nutrition education seems to have gone.
Yes. That program, the state decided that they were going to regionalize that program, so they put out an RFP and a county, I want to say Livingston maybe, I can't remember, but I think it might have been Livingston, received the, is going to receive the funding, and then they will, within the region, disperse that funding. So that was a pass-through money for us. It came to us and we passed it on to the cooperative extension.
So
Ken says Wayne County.
Wayne, okay.
If it matters.
It's out there.
So we're part of that region.
Did I get that right, Ken? Okay.
Okay. I think, yeah, that's all. Thank you.
Loveland, I saw your hand.
Yes, thank you. Tom, can you go back to the emergency aid to adults? I was trying to understand what you were saying in terms of the local revenues. Can you share a little bit more information about?
Yes. So what I had said was what appears just as three lines in this part of the budget document, uh-huh. In each case, they are consolidating what are actually separate lines in the budget. And Joe confirmed what I thought was the case, which is that, so there's one line that is repayments of assistance. So someone qualified for assistance, we made a payment. For EAA, most likely it was either for heat or rent. At some later point, so one of two things would have happened then. Either the person moves out and the landlord sends us back some or all of the money that we paid for a particular month, or more likely, for that particular program, most if not all, correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner, most if not all of the persons who qualify for that particular kind of assistance, part of that, part of the process of applying and being approved is that I believe they enter into a repayment agreement. Mm-hmm. So over time, they will be paying back that assistance. That will be rolled up into that line that is maybe mislabeled local revenues.
I see. Thank you.
Anyone else? One more.
I noticed that now there's a deputy commissioner. I'm glad to see someone in that title. How did you get along with not without one before?
You know, I don't. Maybe insanity. And
that's a workout.
Yeah. I think the decision came about, frankly, because I took a look at who's leaving, and when I came on board, I had really experienced staff in senior positions who were able to continue to run their programs and with me monitoring. With things changing so much, I really am going to have to pay, because I lost my director of services last year, so that's a huge change. And last year I also lost my Adult Protective Services long-term care coordinator. So I have a lot of senior staff who are new, and I need to be able to pay more attention to the program areas and really provide that assistance for them to grow, because all of those positions are civil service. So we'll be lucky if we can get the people we want, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but I'm going to need to be much more involved in monitoring those programs.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Patricia.
Anytime.
And that concludes our evening, and we're back here Monday at 5:30 with everyone's favorite, the SPCA.
Oh, that was so.